that's just to kind of get you an intro to our characters that we will be returning to later on in the teaching. But before we go there, when it comes to talking about hell on earth, I think one of the first things that I think many people think of, and I know I've thought of during this teaching, is natural disasters, or just disasters. People are like, this is an unmitigated bad thing. So, like, that's been in the news a lot lately, with hurricanes that have been in the news. I know even in Awana, the kids are like, why does God send hurricanes? So it's kind of on my mind. So when it comes to natural disasters, as I was getting ready for this teaching, somehow or another I came across an advertisement for the movie Granite Mountain Hot Shots, which is coming out in about a month. And this movie is about these firefighters who died in a big, very hot forest fire in Arizona. And for me, this was just really cool because, you know, I love hiking, and these guys go hiking all over the place, and reading them, they use the maps and see where the fire's going. And so their story just intrigued me. So I was reading all about it. Not to get into all those details, though, but ultimately, they ended up perishing in just the fire. They had these fire shelters, but they just weren't enough. This fire was just massively hot. Unfortunately, it perished very quickly. The thing that's really intriguing about the story is, and kind of gets a little bit at why and how I think God uses that, is, you know, they were just up there eating their lunch. They were up there eating their lunch 1 hour before their death in a safe place. And I think they saw that the fire was moving in a particular direction, but they didn't have a full view of it. So they're like, oh, we want to go help. So in the process of going to go help, they made a fateful decision where this fire did something that no fire had ever done before, and just moved incredibly quickly, and unfortunately, they got into a place that they could not get out of. They perished. So this is one example, literally, hell on earth. I mean, you know, all the descriptions of hell, Bible, is very common. Well, there's lots of forest fires, lots of natural disasters to come. Just to get into why that is, we have another teaching coming up on this, but things originally were very good in the Garden of Eden when God first created us, but unfortunately we chose equality with God rather than good life in the Garden of Eden. God said that part of the consequences of that decision is you're not going to be living in a perfect world. But more to the point on that, I think it's more than about punishment. Ultimately, I know as myself, my inclination is to think that I can do everything on my own. You know, my wife's like, "Where did I come from?" Forget about it. I heard by Helen. And you know, like they always talk about food poisoning. You know, my natural inclination is, nothing I can't see is not going to kill me. But the reality is that I am not in control of my own destiny. And I think God uses these natural disasters to ultimately remind us of the fact that we are dependent upon Him. And I don't know about you guys, but I know I need that reminder. I'm just thankful that God hasn't actually brought on to me one of these things yet to get that can happen to me. But I know this, if those things didn't happen at all, I think I didn't need. So another aspect of this, though, is that in the Bible we see a lot of times where God gives warnings. He's like, "You guys are really off track here. You're sacrificing your children in the valley. You're doing very terrible things, and I'm going to have to. If you don't start doing better, I'm going to have to bring you drastic consequences." There's a couple of verses on this. Isaiah 10:5, "Woe to the Assyrian, the rod of my anger, whose hand is the club of my wrath." Jeremiah 24:10, "I will send the sword, famine, and plague against them until they are destroyed from the land I gave them and their ancestors." So sometimes these natural disasters, droughts, enemy coming in and wiping out everything, just read the prophets. You'll get this one. So the other thing about these natural disasters, these disasters of physical suffering is that as bad as they are, they're actually not as bad as spiritual and emotional disasters. This is a quote from C.S. Lewis. Mental pain is less dramatic than physical pain, but it is more common and also more hard to bear. The frequent attempt to conceal mental pain increases the burden. It is easier to say my tooth is aching than to say my heart is broken. So as bad as these physical things are, there are worse ways of hell that we live on earth, our heart and our spirit. And the other thing about these kind of problems is that, you know, when this terrible disaster, your house burns down, you're still alive, wow, that's terrible, you feel bad about that, but in the end, that goes away, you recover. These spiritual, mental things, those things, they're with you, they're not going away, unless you rely upon the Lord to help you deal with them. And this is actually something else when I was looking into this teaching. This is the conclusion of science, too. Go look this up. They'll all be like, yes, we've determined that emotional and spiritual pains are worse than physical pains. Census of the psychologist. You know, you see this emphasis on depression, you know, how like depression, you know, some people tend to overlook depression. No, depression is more horrible. One of the other things, too, is to keep in mind with these natural disasters is that God knows the ultimate plan, right? Like, we look at something in the short term and we think, oh, that was really terrible. But God knows that this terrible thing actually leads to something really good 10 years out, that if you don't have this terrible thing, the good thing's not going to happen. I don't know if any of you guys have read the Dune novels, but I read the Dune novels. And the Dune novels, again, you know, the humans, you know, some humans, if they take this drug, have the ability to see that, you know, these events happen over the next period. They can see what events are going to happen, and if those events happen, this terrible thing is going to happen. But then if these events happen, this good thing will happen. And not to go into all the doom thing, but it just illustrated to me how God knows the ultimate plan, right? We look at things that are terrible now, but without this terrible, these terrible things, God's not going to be able to make your grandson become president of the United States and lead 1,000 people to Christ. We don't know how the sequence of events all God does. So that's one way in which hell can be unearthed, or seem to be unearthed, or feel like it's unearthed, natural disasters. The next thing, though, is, and actually I did want to mention this, in dealing with all those things, it's all in how we choose to look at it. You know, Dale Carnegie has a quote, happiness doesn't depend on any external conditions. It's governed by our mental attitude. So in all these terrible things, it's all in how we choose to look at it. Joshua 1:9, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. The Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And then Philippians 4:11-14, Paul in his life went through a lot of difficult things. I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. Paul got beat up at every town. Paul knows about that. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. So ultimately, in all these natural terrible disasters, it's all about learning to trust God in the midst of those things. But moving on to hell on earth in a second way, this is a very sobering, and we're going to spend a lot of time in this, but in the last few years, more so than ever, I mean, Satan's always been here, but in the last few years, it's becoming much more public that he's being invited in. There was an Alaskan town council meeting recently where they literally prayed to Satan. The Oklahoma City Civic Center used to form a black mass for the first time. Basically, black mass is kind of like the opposite. We do everything the opposite of Christ dying on the cross for our sins. We get into all the details of that, but the fact that they're doing this publicly. Harvard University actually wanted to do the black mass first, but there was a massive protest against it, so Harvard's like, all right, well, I guess we won't do a black mass after all. But the fact that the most elite educational institution in our country wanted to do one, that shows where maybe, you know, things are going a little bit with Satan here. I was reading this article about the European prime ministers, I think it's the leader of France, Germany, and Italy. They all met together to commemorate the completion of the construction of the largest tunnel in the world. And at this thing, they basically performed this satanic ritual. I mean, these leaders of our government they didn't participate, they just watched. But that's how they chose to celebrate the this building of this big tunnel. Another thing that's been going on, and you may have heard about this on Christian radio, is these after-school Satan clubs. And basically, at the after-school Satan club, as believers, we've been doing these good news Bible clubs. And so there's been people who are like really against Christ, and they're like, well, you're going to do good news Bible clubs, and you have the right to do that under the Constitution, but we're going to do our after-school Satan clubs. And so they've been starting this up in many schools. And they've been trying to get the satanic books into the libraries and into the libraries. Another statistic that you may not be aware of, witchcraft is the fourth largest religion in the United States now. It's actually bigger than Muslims or Jehovah's Witnesses. I was especially surprised about the Muslims. And in doing all this, one of the things that they do is they say, well, we're all about rationalism. We're all about rationalism. We're not big faith-based people like those Christians. We're all about what's rational. Their whole thing revolves around the only God is yourself. This is what they say. The only God is yourself. The only sacrament is to pleasure oneself in any way imaginable. And the only commandment is to do whatever makes you happy, which is actually not what they do. But interestingly about the whole thing, even though they're saying it's all rational, in their private ceremonies, they constantly invoke Satan's name. So it's kind of like as usual, Satan's the father of lies. Not that those other things are good, but you're getting yourself into even worse stuff. And the occult, it's always been the gateway into this thing. When I talk about the occult, we're talking about Wicca, Druids, Voodoo, Nigeria, Santeria, New Age, astrologers, psychics, spirit mediums. Basically all these things are like harnessing some kind of unseen spiritual power, which is not God, so it's on the other two. And so that's why it oftentimes becomes this gateway into ultimately satanic worship. Psalm 96:5, for all the gods of the nations are idols, the Lord made the heavens. So all this stuff, it's all idols, it's all ultimately either coming from Satan or from his forces. Something else I wanted to mention too, rationalism, for 23% of the people say rationalism, or these religious nuns, is what they, what they are. But what ends up happening with rationalism is there's nothing to it. So they end up like going into this occult stuff. Because rationalism, Mike and I were kidding about this at lunch on Friday. What do you talk about at the rationalist Sunday meeting? And I was like, well, you believe in nothing and you still believe in nothing. It's like, nobody wants to come. It's like, hey, you want to go to church this Sunday? Well, same message as last week. but moving on here, so some people are inviting Satan directly in, but a lot of us aren't inviting Satan in, but yet our hells are man-made. We created our own difficult things. And this is just a picture of war here. And there's been terrible disasters through war throughout history. I mean, Nazi Germany was like based upon the thing about, you know, we are the higher man, right, of all these lower men, you know, get rid of them. And that was that ended up killing about 30 million people. Communism in Russia, which is based upon the idea that God is, you know, God is bad, man is good, we'll just set up a society where we share with each other, and it'll be all wonderful. Ultimately, Stalin got in charge. Stalin ended up killing 20 million of his own people, and getting rid of God did not turn out to be such a great idea. Same thing happened with Mao in China. He ended up doing the Cultural Revolution. So these are just, at a governmental level, when we take God out and we just decide we're going to go it on our own, you end up getting hell on earth. But that's at the governmental level. In our own personal lives, we also bring in hells in our own little, bring in hell in a sense in our own little personal life. And it comes from our natural inclination to selfishness. Ultimately, I think as men, we want love and community. That's ultimately where happiness comes from. And those things cannot happen when our focus is entirely on ourselves. James 3:16, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. And then James 4:1-2, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this? Your passions are at war within you. You desire, do not have, so you murder. You covet, you cannot obtain, so you fight with quarrel. Do not have, because you do not. This is the key part. Do you get that? Do not have, do not ask. So, Kellen, this is going to go back to our War Room movie. And I mentioned earlier that she's going through some tough times. We're going to show just a little bit of the tough times that she's dealing with, which are kind of related back to these verses. You can see that there's some serious conflict going on there. And one of the things Satan wants to do is confuse us as to what the real issue is. We just talked about how selfishness is at work there. But also what's at work there is we're not realizing what the real enemy is. And 2 Corinthians 4:4, the God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the gospel that displays the glory of Christ as the image of God. Ephesians 6:10-12. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So we have another clip for you. And this is kind of like, and by the way, get this War Room movie and watch it home. It's loaded with good scenes. But this is kind of like the point where our old lady who's been working with our wife who's in trouble, really, she basically has her, I want you to write down everything about your husband that's frustrating you right now. Write down and write it all down. And then here's what she's going to tell her about it. And that's what we're going to watch.
And I could write more, but
So some of the passages, biblically, some of the things she's talking about. Matthew 11, 28-30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle, humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. And then 1 Thessalonians 5:17. Pray without ceasing. And the name of this movie was The War Room. And the reason it was called The War Room is the fact that it refers to the fact that the only way you win a war is by having a good strategy. right? We're in a war. We're in a war with the devil. And in the battle with the devil, the only winning strategy is to let God do the fighting by relying on Him in prayer in every aspect of our life. I actually had a scene, we didn't show it today, where she shows the wife her war room, and up there she's just got all the issues in her life that she's struggling with, and verses about those, and how she prays through those things in her war room. So as I was thinking about this and getting ready for the teaching today, I was thinking about my own life, and where do I need grace? And I need grace in many ways, many areas. But I have a natural inclination sometimes to think, I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting better. And it hit me. One of the things that I've been struggling with lately is that I'm kind of a coward. I don't really like conflict. I don't like talking to people about Christ. I like getting along with people, you know. And I realized, you know what, Jim? That's where you need grace. You need to be praying about that and letting God give you grace in that area. Just give that up to God. And so what I wanted to do is, I think all of us have areas where we need to give, allow God's grace, where we need to be asking God, God, you take this burden. I've given that burden over to God. So I just wanted to take like maybe 30 minutes, 30 seconds, a minute. If you know something where in your life where you need to give that up, then give that up. Or if you don't know an area in your life where you need to ask for God's grace right now, then maybe ask God for that. Just spend time with God. But I wanted to share one final thing before we... So, relying upon God's grace and bringing Him into it through prayer and all the different things we're struggling with is key. And in our LTG, we have the LTG meetings, and we're going to pray for each other. And, we've been doing this for years. Really, I never remember praying for him. I mean, that's not entirely true. I do every once in a while remember to pray for him. So somebody had the brilliant idea of, every day at noon, we are going to pray for these prayer requests in our LTG. And I'm like, all right, I'll put the alarm into my phone. It'll go off, and then I'll pray for the people in the LTG. Well, lo and behold, when the alarm goes off, I guess I should pray for the people in LTG. And when the alarm goes off, I remember to pray for the people in the LTG. So I started praying for everybody in my LTG at noon. I mean, sometimes I'll be busy, but, getting a lot higher percentage than I used to. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. You're praying for everybody in your LTG. Shouldn't you also pray for your family? I mean, LTG is important, but family's more important than them. And I was praying for my family. I mean, I was actually much better at praying for my family, but I could do better. So I'm like, I'm going to put an alarm in for the family, too. So I put an alarm in for the family, and lo and behold, I'm like praying for more issues with the family than what I was before. And then I'm like, my extended family? And so I haven't got an alarm on them yet, but when I pray for my family, it transitions into the extended family. And so, she had her war room, and I think that war room idea, a dedicated place to be with God, just putting all these, that's great. I just want to throw out another idea. These alarm clocks on our smartphones are really good. good for, you know, getting us to pray in the midst of all our busyness of the day. So, in conclusion, hell on earth comes to our world because we live in a fallen world, back from our fateful decision in the Garden of Eden, choosing to be fool with God. Hell comes on earth from literally inviting Satan in. And hell comes on earth because we bring it in. You know, we are selfish and we get fooled by the devil and we create all kinds of problems of our own making that are really horrible. And ultimately the solution is to rely on God's grace and trust in his prayer.